Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. I am still Josh Beiser, and we have a great cast for you this week. As you know, we record these casts sometimes in chunks or blocks over weeks, and sadly, James couldn't make it to this one. But we have an interesting cast nonetheless. Our topic tonight is going to return to the mobile game market, as we're going to discuss about monetization and some of the recent trends that have been going on. And we have a new guest on tonight to help me talk about that. So please welcome the CEO of the company Soomla, which is a mobile gaming analytics. He is the CEO. Please welcome Yanif Nizan.
Hey, good to be here.
It's great to have you on, Yanif. I know you were introduced to me by Ira Cohen when we spoke about Anodot, which would probably be, by the time people are listening to this cast, probably a few weeks since that interview, or probably even a few months. Time is certainly flying fast around here these days. So how are things going with you?
Good. Yeah. So, in terms of the business, it has been going very well. Mobile games has been growing like crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's a good market to be in, let's say it that way.
Yeah. And it's definitely one that has sparked a lot of interesting discussions. I know we've talked about mobile gaming and mobile design multiple times here on the podcast. And it's definitely one that has shown some interesting ups and downs. But for those of you listening to this cast right now, the week of our recording, of course, Nintendo recently made their major entry into mobile gaming with Super Mario Run. And hopefully by the time you're hearing this, we'll kind of see the fallout or the results from their little mobile experiment. But to get started with, Yanif, since this is your first time on the podcast, if you wouldn't mind telling everyone a little bit about your background and kind of what Soomla is.
Yeah, sure. So I started my first steps into entrepreneurship with another company, actually, called iView. iView mm-hmm. is in a video advertising company. Mm-hmm. It's about 100 people today and based in New York. And with Soomla, we started about 4 years ago with the emergence of mobile games. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun ever since. We're focused on analytics of the monetization of the game. So the mm-hmm. one of the most important aspects is the monetization mm-hmm. and getting more insights into that, especially with ad-driven monetization is super important for developers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned Super Mario. I've been following that closely. So if you want to chat about that as well, would be happy to have a quick chat about that also.
Sure. Yeah, and I definitely have a few questions for you regarding some of the information that you've learned and some of your thoughts on mobile gaming, especially on the monetization front. For, I guess, the main point is, the audience or the main people who are listening to this cast are either going to be like developers or people who are more on the core gamer side of things. The people who will probably either be playing mostly console or PC and have kind of been looking at things from the outside in, from the mobile side. And the mobile market, especially as someone who hasn't really grown up with that side, it's definitely been an interesting thing to watch. We've been talking about, you know, the big hits, Clash of Clans, Angry Birds, Kim Kardashian's Hollywood, and of course, you know, Farmville and the like. And there's so many parts to start with, it's kind of hard. But I think,
yeah.
Let me see. I think let's start with Super Mario Run then, guys, because I think that will be a great way to kind of lead in to our talk about monetization in general. So, for those of you listening to this cast right now, it will probably, again, be a few weeks since it's been released, but there has been a lot of buzz surrounding Super Mario Run. This is, of course, as we just said, Nintendo's first real attempt at mobile gaming. They, of course, have done their quote-unquote pay-to-start games. I know there's like a Pokemon one, there was a across one, but in terms of actually making a mobile game, this is it. And they've certainly gone with a few unique differentiating factors compared to your basic or your regular mobile game. So I guess for you, Yanov, as someone who's been following Super Mario Run, what do you think about it?
So yeah, obviously a lot of excitement. It kind of captured the main page of the App Store, and mm-hmm. and it has been receiving a lot of buzz. I think it signifies the market getting more mature as bigger companies mm-hmm. who obviously have very strong IP. Mm-hmm. So IP in this context meaning like recognizable characters and very recognized gameplay that people yeah. are already familiar with. So those games that we are all familiar with from console gaming and PC gaming now making it into the mobile market and more bigger companies coming in. In terms of the monetization, I think it's still Nintendo are not there in terms of understanding how the free-to-play market operates. Mm-hmm. But obviously, with the strength of the IP, I don't know if there is an IP bigger than Super Mario in games. Mm-hmm. So that allows them to probably be successful, even though the game is not perfect in terms of the way they're monetizing it. One thing I don't know if you've seen this, but the average rating on Super Mario is 2.4. Mm. So it means about half of the users give you the rating of 1, which is horrible for, mm-hmm. for a game. Like normally games like that average like 4.5. So that signifies a lot of disappointment from the market in terms of, okay, we have expected something that is more aligned with how we play today in mobile. Mm-hmm. And what Nintendo did is they basically gave you 4 free levels, and then you have to pay to continue. And I think that the market is reacting negatively to mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the big debate point that I've been seeing from a lot of people who have been looking at the game. And again, for those of you listening to the cast, Super Mario Run is not a free-to-play game or a 99-cent game. It's a game that is on the mobile side at $10 to buy. And then, of course, once you've bought it, it is yours to keep. There's no in-game ads, no additional pay features along that front. And that is kind of like the really weird point for the mobile side of things. For core gamers or the people used to Nintendo and traditional retail, $10 is pretty much what we've come to expect for a lot of games. I guess my next mm-hmm. question for you, Yanov, is in terms of that kind of monetization scheme, there's been talks about whether or not the mobile market can really handle or could really support a quote-unquote premium price for a game. Do you think that $10 is a little too much, or you think that it is possible to have a game around that price scheme?
Yeah, so obviously there are some games that have been doing well with the premium model. Mm-hmm. There isn't one right model, and obviously with a strong IP such as Super Mario, mm-hmm. you might be able to pull off a premium model, especially given that people already pay premium mm-hmm. for Super Mario on Wii and on other platforms. So that's fine. But actually, what Nintendo did with the latest version of Super Mario is that you can download it for free. There has been games that have done well with premium, like Minecraft is probably the most known one. Mario is a free game, but the thing is they make it paid after 4 levels. So they did a free to play game, but not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there have been multiple ways of making money through the mobile side of things. We've seen 99 cent games. We've seen, I think, like, is the other, like, standard price, like, around $3 or $4 for a mobile game? Is that considered, like, the normal high?
Well, actually, so when mobile games started, mm-hmm. Yeah, games were sold for a dollar or two. But since the market has really changed around 2012, 2013, the market really changed. I think 2012 was about 60% of the games were making money with the premium model. Mm-hmm. 2013, it was already flipped. 2014, it was already 90%, of the money being made by free games. So, the model with the free games is that you make in-app purchases mm-hmm. inside the games, and this model is very different. It's not so much about, okay, you can play like a level or two and then you have to pay for it. It's different in games like Farmville. Mm-hmm. You can play forever for free, but if you want to build a bigger castle, bigger farm, you want to have a better army in Clash of Clans. You want to have in games where you have like real time battles. You want a bigger rifle or a better tank or whatever. You can buy these things, and people tend to pay a lot of money for these in game advantages. Mm-hmm. So the market around 2013, the switch sort of started, and in 2014, 2015, it was already very, very much towards the in-app purchase models, mm-hmm. Also called free-to-play or games as a service. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and when we looked at, like, sort of the start or the growing mobile market back in, like, 2012, 2013 with games like Farmville and the like, that was when we started the trend back then was kind of the pay or wait side of things. We saw a lot of mobile games being released with energy mechanics. You can only do, mm-hmm. let's say, 20 actions a day unless you want to spend more money, or you either have to wait for things to finish or stuff like that. And things have certainly moved towards more of trying to get the player to essentially be instilled with a value of spending for these games. And we have seen a lot of games, even on the PC and even on the console side these days, who have been going for monetization or microtransaction models. Again, you know, you can buy a fancier looking skin for your character in League of Legends, or what they do with loot boxes in Overwatch, and I'm sure a lot of mobile games have done that as well. With trying to, again, get that value for, or try to instill that value in the consumer to get them to spend money. And that has become a very hot topic, especially for almost like this kind of like old versus new design in a sense. Because I know a lot of people, at least on my side of things, who are either traditional designers or those who have stuck with console and PC gaming, who aren't fans of these kinds of monetization. They, of course, grew up like myself with you put $10, $20, $30 down, whatever, and then the game is yours. You know, you're not going to be bugged anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no in-app purchases. One and done kind of thing. But as you've definitely said, Yanov, and what we've seen is the quote-unquote games as a service model has become a very popular trend in almost all corners of the game industry these days.
Yeah, so if you look at the top 100 games, probably 95 to 99 of them are using these models. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what? Obviously, your point is right. The core gamers, mm-hmm. the console gamers, are not too happy, and they're quite vocal about it mm-hmm. in places like Reddit. If you ask the question, what do you think about that, like, you know, purchases and mm-hmm. stuff like that, you'll get, like, a lot of talk about that. Mm-hmm. In reality, mobile games is a bit different than console games. It has a really beautiful side that allows everyone to be a gamer, mm-hmm. which wasn't existing. Like, when I grew up, I was 16, I was playing games like crazy, mm-hmm. And then I stopped, right? Because I became busy with my life and stuff. And, mm-hmm. and most people didn't play so much, until mobile came along. And now I think 60-70% of the United States are playing games. You look at the subway in New York, mm-hmm. you see like everyone is playing on the subway.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it requires different monetization models mm-hmm. because people are looking for the free games. And so you need other people to pay for the party.
Mm-hmm.
So the two main models are the in-app purchases and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's similar to TV content, right? Yeah. If you watch TV, you can either pay for an HBO subscription or you can get free content if you watch a lot of advertising. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't invented by mobile games.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, people want everything for free mm-hmm. all the time, but you know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, someone also has to take care of the content developers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's kind of like the real interesting rub when it comes to talking about this. And it's one of the things, as someone who has spent so much time talking to developers and seeing things more on the business side, that I've come to understand it is a quote unquote a necessary evil for a lot of games. Because if no one's getting paid to make the game, that game's not going to last. It doesn't matter if it's getting, you know, 5 stars everywhere. And mm-hmm. part of the challenge, of course, has been trying to balance these two sides. You want to give the consumer value, you don't want to annoy them. But again, at the same time, if your app or your game is not making money, you're in deep trouble. And I guess this is a pretty interesting question I want to ask you about, Yonath, especially since you do, or since your company is all about analytics and measuring these kinds of things, are there like any like important like tips or I guess like insights regarding that line between when an in-game app or a game becomes too intrusive with its monetization options? Like, when is it considered going too far to the point that it pushes people away from trying to spend money in your game?
Yeah, so I think this is not directly what we are doing at Soomla, but mm-hmm. I think what developers have learned to do is monitor two things. One is the retention, mm-hmm. and the other one is the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see a lot of times they would put something that is like too intrusive or asking people to pay too much, and you can see the ratings become like negative. So companies have monitored that. Obviously, there are some companies that if the company is not profitable, they would need to make a stronger push towards monetization. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they're well off, they might not be as aggressive. And obviously there are some companies that are greedier and they're pushing it harder.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is sometimes when people get annoyed. But if the game is very good, if the game is has a strong appeal, then people are more okay with getting more ads or more things to buy or things like that. So
mm-hmm.
and I think people have kind of accepted this more and more as the market matured. So if you think about games like Candy Crush,
mm-hmm.
So I have friends that play Candy Crush for like 3 years now,
mm-hmm.
and they're saying, okay, I ended up paying over a course of 3 years probably $500 or $1,000, which sounds like a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, on a month basis, it's more like $10 a month or $20 a month,
mm-hmm.
which is not a huge amount of money to be paying for really good content that have really entertained you for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about that kind of content and the pricing side of things, I guess in your opinion or what you've been tracking or following on of, in terms of like actually pricing this stuff, what is considered like, is there considered like an average, like I guess quote unquote fair price to charge for in-app purchases or microtransactions along that front?
Yeah, so what's happening with the microtransactions, basically the player can decide how much they spend. Mm-hmm. So usually, you know, the starting point is $1. There are, most games have an items for up to $100, and you can buy multiple times, right? So you can keep buying and keep buying. So, you know, technically it's possible to even spend thousands of dollars on a game, mm-hmm. especially if you're playing that for a long time. Mm-hmm. Most users don't do that, but I guess I've heard there are some really wealthy people with so much excess wealth that they pay for things like that and they don't even feel that it's a big expense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that takes us into the discussion of the other quote unquote whales that has become a popular term, especially when looking at like social game developers or mobile game developers talk about their audience or talking more about the monetization side of things. The people who are in like your maybe less than 1%, but are your biggest spenders. And there's been debates about how much do you cater to your whales or to making your game be popular among those people. And this can definitely become a very heated debate depending upon who the audience is who's listening to it. But I definitely want to at least bring this up here. Has there been any differing trends or different thoughts on whether or not to make your game appeal to this very small user base? Like, has there been any like different thoughts on along that those lines?
So yeah, obviously companies have been trying to get more and more you know, better at offering more value to these. So like any business, if you have a VIP customer, then you want to treat them like a VIP. Some companies even invite the VIP users to participate in like real world events where they, you know, have a big conference and they're buying them a lot of, you know, entertainment and food and stuff like that, to kind of show their respect for these VIP users. You know, the term whale is kind of very negative in the sense. I don't know if it's very negative, but it's definitely more on the negative scale. Yeah. You know, so a lot of companies think about their top customers as VIP users. But I think the biggest trend that we have seen in 2015, 2016, so in the last 18 months or so, is actually more and more companies are trying to monetize the other part of the users. Mm-hmm. So the users who never buy anything with in-app purchases. So this has been the focus of the last 18 months for, I would say, 60 or 70% of the market. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at, okay, we have 100% of the users, 2% of them are buying things in our game. But then there are the 98% that never buy anything. And this is even more when they're looking at, okay, what do we do with these users? They just play our game for free. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should do something about it. And almost all the mobile games companies are doing today, even the biggest ones, are adding, especially the rewarded videos. Mm-hmm. So the rewarded video is sort of a relatively new model where the user watches a video and then in return, he gets something he could have bought with actual money. It's a sort of like an everyone is happy model, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a value exchange. So the user gets some free coins in the game. So the perception of value, at least, or something he could have bought for real money. Mm-hmm. The advertisers, they get their ads shown to users, and the publisher, so the game maker, gets money from the advertiser. So it's like a triangle where everyone gets something.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely been what a lot of people have been trying to look for more on the monetization free-to-play side, is, again, trying to make all the groups happy. Keep your consumer base playing your game, but still having those options and making them good enough that they're going to be willing to spend money on them. And when it comes to console and the PC side of things, that challenge becomes even greater. As, again, we have an audience who's more used to just buying straight content. You're buying, a season pass for DLC. You're buying $2 to $3 worth of, new weapons or levels or stuff like that. And that is different from just simply buying cosmetic options. And another trend we've been seeing, of course, and this always leads to another interesting debate, is quote-unquote pay to win. When a game, when essentially the monetization option is so favored that if you don't spend money, you really just can't do everything, or you're not able to really progress compared to someone who has more money than you. And this goes again back to the ever challenging topic of time versus money in these games. And that actually takes me to another question, but I want to get your thoughts on this one first regarding that kind of challenge between someone who's going to play your game for, 10, 20 hours, or someone who's just going to spend $100, $200. How do you, keep these two engaged without having one, overstep the other?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned pay to win. It's usually being thought of as a negative thing, and it should, right? Mm-hmm. You want to keep a certain balance in the game. And obviously, you also mentioned before that a lot of the things that you buy are basically things that are shortcuts, yeah, right? So you have to wait like an hour, and then instead of waiting for an hour, you can pay a dollar. And for a lot of users, that's, there is a saying in the business world that time is money. And for a lot of people, that's true, right? So I'm willing to pay a dollar every time. I can save myself an hour almost. It's a good transaction for me. So whenever you make that decision for the user, you're likely to get some people converted. Mm-hmm. The pay to win usually is caused by another thing. It's caused by having the ability to buy weapons or characters that are far superior than others. And usually the way, in terms of game design, usually the way to overcome that is not make one character or weapon superior to the others, but just make it have better odds at something, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about, okay, I can shoot this weapon or that weapon, and the better weapon, the more expensive weapon might have 2% chance of doing a critical hit versus the first one has only 1% chance of doing a critical hit. So it is better, but it's not, it's better in terms of, it sometimes is better. It's more likely to be better, but it's not an absolute win all the time, right? So it can be overcome with skill and luck, right? So it maintains the balance, and it's something that we see in very good, in very well balanced games, is that there is, in any given day, either player can win, right? And this is important. Otherwise, people lose hope and they say, I don't want to play this game. I'm always losing.
Yeah. Right? And that is definitely a point that has certainly been hammered home, especially on the PC and console side of things. The second you introduce something that is all around better than anything else behind a paywall, it is going to drive a lot of people away. It will bring some people in, the ones who want to be the best, but it is definitely looked at more as a negative compared to the rest of the design. Mm-hmm. Now, the other question I want to ask you, Yanov, and this is one thing that I've been curious about. When, at least from my side of things as a console and PC gamer, whenever we talk about sort of one of the bigger differentiating trends between console and PC and the mobile side of things is the time spent on these games, or at least a quote-unquote session of these games. And one of the things that I've heard and things that I've picked up over the years is that when it comes to the mobile side, most consumers go for quick engagements. Maybe, you know, 2 to 3 minutes of playing this game as sitting and then they'll go do something else. Or maybe when they're on the bus or waiting around for something, they'll play a game. But for the console and PC side of things, we tend to focus on longer engagements. Sort of like, when I sit down to play a game, I know I'm going to be there for at least 30 minutes minimum, maybe an hour or more maximum into one sitting. We want kind of like these longer engagements because we're basically setting aside these chunks of time. So my question for Yanov is, has that trend changed at all from the mobile side of things? Are people still preferring these very quick engagements, or have things changed at all along those lines?
So I think for the most part, most games are designed for the quick engagement. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's all driven by what consumers need and want, right? So if I'm a consumer, and by the way, there are about, I think, 500,000 games already in both app stores together. Mm-hmm. And so obviously some are meant for shorter engagement and some are meant for longer engagement. So as a gamer, I wouldn't call myself a gamer, but as a mobile gamer, sort of, I might have 10 different games on my phone or even 50, but let's say 10. Some of them will be meant for quick interaction. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting for a bus. I'm in a meeting and I want to play underneath the table or something like that. As the CEO, I don't get to do that, but some other people mm-hmm. do. Or maybe even at maybe there is a football game and I'm waiting for the players to come out of timeout, so I have like 20 seconds to play. So these are all short interactions. At the same time, a game like Candy Crush or the really good top grossing games, like the strategy games, like Game of War, Mobile Strike, these type of games, you can probably play for an hour at a time.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that actually takes me to another interesting point. As we mentioned at the start of our discussion, Yanov, we are seeing more major companies have been looking at mobile over the last few years. Of course, there's been EA, Square Enix, recently with Nintendo, etc. And they have been trying to do more with going big, in a sense, with some of their games. Square Enix, for instance, has been, over the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, been porting some of their major known titles. Final Fantasy, The World Ends With You. And again, going for this kind of premium price. Because these are, again, like, they can be 60, 70 hour long RPGs in some cases. And, like, keeping with that line about having sort of like both sides, you have these very quick engagements and these very long ones. Do you see those, like, again, like a traditional console or PC game doing that well on the mobile side? Again, we're talking games that are meant to be played for 30 hours plus in some cases.
Yeah, so I think the going premium on mobile is probably not the best way to go into mobile. Mm-hmm. I think there are better ways. One of the good ones was Hearthstone mm-hmm. By Blizzard, Activision. So they really found a gameplay. So, you know, you can port many things. Mm-hmm. If you take a game, you can break it down, right? So you have the IP, the characters, the world that you've built, the language, all that. And then you have the gameplay itself. And even the gameplay has different elements. Some of them are more suitable for mobile, some of them are less. And so what you've seen with Hearthstone, they took a gameplay that works well with mobile and put an IP from the console and PC world into that. With Pokemon Go, well, it's not really an IP from console mm-hmm. so much, but potentially it could have been. So the gameplay is really perfect for mobile. It's probably the most mobile gameplay mm-hmm. In terms of you're actually mobile with your device, and you could put into that system. You can plug in multiple types of IP, not just Pokemon. Mm-hmm. So you could think about that gameplay inheriting IP from all types of different games. So I believe the trick is to take a gameplay that already proven in mobile, mm-hmm. if you're not sure how to go about it. So actually taking the gameplay that already works on mobile, either the city building mm-hmm. or the runner genre, like Sonic has, like Sega has been doing with Sonic, or even Super Mario, they could have done better. Although the gameplay is a pretty good fit for mobile to begin with, but they haven't really fully adapted the games as a service model of monetization, which I think is backfiring for them right now.
Mm-hmm. And that actually goes to another really interesting question regarding, again, trying to get more value on this kind of monetization trend. As we talked about earlier in the cast, there have definitely been more interest in keeping an eye on retention in terms of how well your game is doing. I guess my question for you, Yonath, is has there been, as we've said over this cast, things have certainly been moving towards more in-app purchases, microtransactions, content along those fronts. Over 2016, like again, as we're recording this, we are pretty much at the end of 2016 for those of you listening. But has there been anything new on the mobile side in terms of new strategies or new techniques, in a sense, for trying to raise money or convince the consumer to spend on an in-app purchase or a microtransaction?
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned before, the last 18 months mm-hmm. were more about monetizing the other 98%, mm-hmm. the ones that are not paying, and the main monetization drivers being the rewarded videos. Okay. One of the things that were focused for some of the companies in 2016, and as we look into 2017, will even become a bigger driver, is analyzing the rewarded video-based monetization and getting better at it with the help of data tools and analytical tools mm-hmm. like Suma. And this is why we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you mentioned before about the difference between the PC gaming and the mobile gaming. Mm-hmm. One of the trends in mobile gaming, not so much on the monetization, as also being in the last 2 years, the role of external IP has been mm-hmm. growing very, very big. So if you looked at 2013, 2014, you've seen a lot of original IP like Angry Birds. Mm-hmm. So actually developers came out with their new set of characters and worlds. Whereas today we see a lot of IP coming from TV, from Hollywood, and from console and PC games into mobile. So if you look at the top 50 games, about half of them already uses external IP, mm-hmm. which means companies are looking to take smaller risks as the market matures, mm-hmm. and they're happy to pay for external IP in order to ensure their success.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking about these markets, that actually takes me to one question I've been thinking about lately. I've been doing some research on my end about sort of the Japanese market and how things have been shifting in terms of the arcade industry and how they have become very big in terms of mobile gaming. And I was just wondering, from where you're at, Yonath, in terms of analyzing these trends and, again, the mobile market, Are there any like major or of note differences between the Japanese consumer when it comes to a mobile game versus like the US market? Because I'm sure for any developers listening, they're probably curious about that one as well.
Yeah, so I'm really not an expert on that market. I've heard that people say that Japanese average user pays like three times more. And there's definitely less advertising going on. But that's pretty much all I can say about the differences.
All right, yeah. Not a problem. Now, another trend that I've been seeing, or one that I've actually been sort of keeping my eye on around here, which again, for those of you listening, is going to be a few months, depending upon when this cast goes up, has been the growing debate about gambling mechanics in mobile and core games. I'm not sure if you've heard of this, but in October of 2016, in my neck of the woods in New Jersey, they unveiled the idea of video game gambling machines, essentially allowing you to gamble on how well you play a game over 40 seconds to a minute, stuff like that. And the debate about using gambling tactics and gambling design in mobile and other games has become another one of those very heated topics. Again, this can bring up the issues of quote-unquote pay-to-win, or, again, about the horror stories we've heard about people becoming addicted to a free-to-play or a mobile game and someone running up a credit card bill, you know, for $800, $900, or a kid gets their hands on their parents' credit card and there's a $1,000 charge to King or Rovio or whatever. And I guess the question for you, Yanif, is, I guess, what is kind of like the way of trying to fight that, or your thoughts on this kind of, I guess, seeping in of the gambling industry in some cases?
So, yeah, I guess you cannot really have like a pure gambling game in the app stores of Google Play and Apple these days, except for companies where it's regulated and it's practically the norm. So if you go to UK, for example, if you go to London, they have places on the street where you can just go and gamble, right? On horses or play bingo for money, and it's as much as you see Starbucks shops in New York, you see these things in London. Like it's in that same frequency, right? So they're everywhere, and it's, you know, in these companies, it's the norm. People know how to handle themselves around these kind of things, because it's being there forever. In other countries where it's not regulated, people are less used to it, and then the risk becomes bigger. And obviously there are some horror stories about people becoming addicted as a result of gambling. The App Store does allow social gambling or soft gambling, which the main difference is that you cannot win money. And by taking away that part, the part where you win, the risk of addiction is lower, right? And so if you look at the top grossing charts of each one of the app stores, you will see, casino games, as at least 20 or 30% of the top grossing apps. But again, these are soft casino games, the ones where you cannot win money, which makes them less addictive. Obviously, if you're making a bet with your friend about who is better at something, who is skilled, then there is not so much of a luck component. It's more of a skill game. And then that makes a lot of the things legal, where you can, you know, you cannot prevent people from betting against each other if they want to. Right. So, but yeah, anyway, so that's some thoughts about that.
Okay. All right. I'm checking our time. I know you probably have to get going in like the next 5 or 10 minutes. And again, this is one of those topics that any one of our discussions can easily branch out to anywhere we can go.
Yeah.
But I have a few, I guess, general questions left then, and then we will wrap things up.
Sure.
I guess the one, and this is one I'm sure that developers, anyone who's listening to this cast, is probably curious about. As we mentioned over this podcast, there have been cases, or when you take a game design to the mobile market, there are certain things you have to pay attention to. Again, you know, how long your engagement is, what kind of in-app purchase you're going to use, how your game is essentially going to be modified to work best in this market. So my question for you, Yanif, is for developers listening, if let's say they want to take their game and put it to a mobile device or the iOS store, are there any major red flags or things that they should pay attention to, or some, or things that they should design their game around if they want to try and succeed the best when it comes to the mobile side of things?
So yeah, definitely if it's the first time you're doing a mobile game, I would suggest sticking to a well-known proven mechanic, proven gameplay. There is enough risk involved in launching a game, especially if you have existing IP, then you already have a fan base, and if you make a good port using familiar gameplay, then you're much more likely to succeed than making a new gameplay altogether. In terms of KPIs and metrics to watch, the absolute number one metric in mobile games today is LTV, so the average lifetime of a user. Because it combines two things together. It combines the retention as well as the monetization. So if your LTV is high, it means that both your retention and monetization are good. If your retention is good, your monetization might as well be good, but it's not necessarily. And there are games with great monetization and low retention, but the LTV is the one that wraps everything together. So a lot of companies are looking at that as their main KPI. But that sometimes requires some premium tools to monitor your LTV. So a lot of companies are the smaller companies sometimes look at retention and monetization separately because they're easier to measure separately. And the last thing I would definitely say in today's mobile gaming market, if you're launching a game, you have to market it. There is zero organic discovery at this point in the market.
Yeah.
So take that into account in advance for sure.
Yeah, and the same can definitely be said on the PC and console side of things these days. And again, that's a topic... Who knows how long we could spend just talking about the marketing side of things here.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me see. I mean, again, there are a lot of different questions I can ask you, and we could easily be here for the next hour or so. But I have one major question regarding the mobile side of things I want to end the cast on with you, Yanif.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, are there any final thoughts on monetization or the mobile market that we haven't touched upon yet that you would like to bring up now?
Yeah, there's one thing I wanted to mention before, and we kind of touched related points, but one of the major differences in terms of mobile market, because it's a free-to-play market as opposed to PC and console, which is more premium monetization, the number one difference is that when you have a free game, you have to be very good with data and analytical tools. So think about it that way. If you sold your game to a user for $10 and now you don't even care if he's playing, if he could be playing, it could be not. You already have your money as a developer. If in the mobile market where it's mostly free to play, if you made a game and people don't play it, there is zero chance for you to monetize it.
Yeah.
So typically mobile game companies are much, much better in terms of analytics and data handling and constantly monitoring what's happening in their game. So that's one of the key differentiators, I think, in the market. It also might lead to better, game design, because people monitor what users are actually doing with the game.
All right. I think with that, we can go to my big question. I think this will probably be a good one to sort of wrap things up with for this cast.
Awesome.
And it's one that I've been asking a lot of developers, especially those who have been looking at things from the mobile side. As we've talked about, or at least here on the podcast, multiple times in the past, there has been some interesting concerns regarding the stability of the mobile side of things. And there's been talks, or at least I've spoken to a few people who feel that there could be, or things could lead to either a crash or a major restructuring of what it means to be in the mobile market and make mobile games. And I've talked to developers on both sides of things. Some who feel that, yes, there will be a major restructuring at some point, while others who feel that the mobile market is still strong enough to sustain itself right now. So my final question for you, Yana, for today is, when you hear that about whether the mobile market is stable enough to keep going as it is, or if things will need to be changed, what do you think about that?
So mobile games today in 2015 was $36 billion, which is already bigger than any other mobile games market. In terms of will it last, it's definitely an interesting question. If you look at the history of gaming, there is always a new platform. Whenever there is a new platform, usually the companies who adopt it the quickest win. I think mobile is a bit different in terms of it opened up a totally new market that never existed before in terms of gaming. So 60-year-old people play games. Never have you thought about 60-year-old people as gamers, right? So in terms of that, it's a much bigger market, and so not likely that it will go away it wouldn't completely disappear all of a sudden, right? Also, because it's not so much of a core gamer market, these people are not necessarily looking for the greatest thing out there all the time. So it's not like once you have Xbox One, the Xbox 360 already feels old, or once you have PS4, you wouldn't play on a PS3, and everyone wants to be on VR very soon with core gaming. But with mobile, people's requirements are different, and because the demographics is older, the changes are slower, and they're not necessarily looking for like really the next big thing. So it's more of a convenience that they have it at the tip of their fingers, and I actually think it will stay. Obviously, there will be changes, there will be new players coming in, it's a dynamic market that changes all the time, and some companies who were big in 2013, you can think about Rovio or Top of the World in 2012, 2013, and now they're struggling in terms of, obviously they're still doing well with their financials, but they're not the leader anymore. They're not even the top 50, I would say. So it's a dynamic market, and companies, the leaders change, but the market as itself stays.
All right. I think with that, that will be a good point to end things on. Again, I think you're like 6 hours ahead of me, maybe. I think in terms of time, I know it is definitely getting late where you are. So let's wrap things up here. Again, Yana, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Again, this is one of those topics that you can't really easily discuss in 30, 40 minutes, let alone an hour. And again, I'm sure if we had more time and my voice was still with me, we could probably talk for a few more.
Yeah, it was great talking to you. It was I'm really honored that you invited me, and it was fun. And hopefully some people will hear us and we'll learn some new things and find this interesting. All right.
So with that, we are going to end this week's discussion here. As always, for those of you listening, thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support Game Wisdom, there are several options available right now. First, we are always looking for new guests, whether to write for us or be future podcast guests, either live or recorded. You can find information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. Be sure to subscribe on Twitch and Twitter under GW Bicer for the latest updates of new content and to catch my usually nightly streams. You can also follow me on YouTube under the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, which is now over 1,000 subscribers strong. You'll find daily videos on video game discussions, game design, and of course, looking at indie and video games as well. And last but not least, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom's Patreon campaign, you can find me on there under Game Wisdom. Donations would be greatly appreciated as they will allow me to keep going and support myself. If we hit some goals, it'll mean more great content for everyone. So again, Yanov, thank you so much for coming on today. And hopefully, maybe we can do this again in the future, because I'm sure there are a lot more mobile topics to discuss.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
All right. So with that, thanks again for tuning in. Hope you guys have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.